Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined by my partner, Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
It's going well. Thank you all for joining us this week and every week. You can find our work at fantasygolfinsider.com and footballinsideredge.com for all of your golf and football gambling and DFS needs and wants. This week, we have the Farmers Insurance Open, and Zach is on location, giving you all of the up-to-date important information, including why in the hell the field sucks so bad, Zachary.
Yeah, it got a little bit worse once they announced that this would be where they also played Genesis. Apparently, playing at Torrey Pines twice was just way too much for a lot of these guys to handle this time of year, which doesn't make any real sense to me as why you'd play one week and not both. I would think that if you were going to be in the field this week, you'd want to see how the course was playing, the types of conditions. You'd want to be on like your best game. It would give you more of an advantage to come back for a signature event when there's a whole lot of prize pool money on the line. But no, I guess there were a lot of players who didn't want that extra look for, you know, God knows whatever reason. So yeah, we had about four or five guys that withdrew from the tournament today, which is kind of becoming a weekly thing. It hasn't even really been just this event. It seems like every single week we've had a couple top names that have waited until the last possible second to drop out. But yeah, that just seems to be the new way that things are going with the tour this season.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. Hopefully next week we'll have a better field because they'll be handing out more money for these guys to be incentivized to play. But yeah, this used to be a place where everyone showed up, most everybody at least. And now, you know, a few of the overseas guys don't come over for it. And now the top guys on the PGA Tour aren't playing either. So
they're too busy collecting their blood money overseas in the Middle East this week, I guess. It's okay for those PGA guys to play on that particular event or those events that are part of the European Tour over there. But the LIV Tour is off limits. But if you want to play in the other events that are sanctioned through the PGA, then it's still okay.
Exactly.
All very weird. It's just this whole season has been strange so far. You kind of keep hoping that they'll pull something together with getting their merger done or getting some kind of deal worked out. But it seems like they want to do everything that they can to piss off PGA Tour fans this year. So if you don't like this, then you can always go and watch them play in a simulator. Have you caught any of that yet? I have zero interest at all in
watching any of that. Not 1 second of it. Not 1 second of it. I don't care. I don't even want to watch. No.
Yeah. I don't. I'm not sure what the brain trust was behind that one that thought, well, if they're not getting to see these guys enough on a golf course, perhaps seeing them play virtually will be the next best thing.
Have you seen any results or anything? Any ratings? Is anyone watching it?
I think there's probably some casuals watching who just love Tiger Woods. They want to see Tiger holding a golf club and swinging it again. Right. I mean, that seems to be what a lot of golf fans are still clinging to. Just seeing him compete in some sort of way, I guess, is enough to get them salivating. Right.
It's only been a couple weeks too. So like the just checking it out factor is still probably new, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's still kind of a novelty. So there's still some fun, but I can't imagine that it's going to be something that long-term people are going to stay super interested in. But yeah, it's driving me crazy to see more and more of these events where the top guys, they just make so much money on these signature events and in the playoffs and in the majors that the rest of the year they can afford to take off. So we're actually getting less and less golf out of the better players and kind of sacrificing what used to be a great event. I mean, it used to be one of the more fun events every year. We'd get a really strong field that would come out. So a little bit disappointing, but it's still an awesome course. And so it should still be kind of fun.
Well, I'll let you talk about it since you'll be on the course and have been many times, but just kind of the rundown, keep in mind it's two different courses. It's the North and it's the South course. The North always plays quite a bit easier. It's about 500 yards shorter, and they'll be starting on Wednesday this week. The south course is 7,700 yards, while the north is only about 7,200 yards. Both are par 72s, right, Zachary?
Yes, they are. So you really, what you're looking for is a fast start on the north course. One of the things that usually comes into play here that I don't see any issue with is winds. So winds can be one of the things that we've seen over the years that if winds get really gusty, then things can get really interesting. I'm not seeing anything other than real calm winds and a lot of sun on Thursday and Friday. It looks like it will get a little bit gusty on Saturday, but really nothing prior to the cut. So you're looking to get out to a fast start. You want to be like -3 to -5 on the north course. It's really a pretty straightforward course where you're kind of holding serve on the par threes and fours, and then you really should be scoring on the par fives. None of the par fives are all that challenging. Greens are on the larger side. They're bent grass greens that have been in place there since 2017. So you just want to get out to a good start there, and then kind of hold serve on the south course. South course, obviously very long. Poa greens that are out there, they played the U.S. Open here a number of times over the years. As recently, I think it was 2021 was the last time that they held it out here. So just a few years ago, tend to be real long, narrow fairways. The rough, it tends to get up. I'm not sure how thick it's going to be, but 3 to 4 inches. Real sticky in terms of the grass. I believe that it's like Kikuyu rough. Don't see that here, but I think here and Riviera are the only two kind of Kikuyu rough courses that we see year in, year out. So it's really sticky. So if you miss the fairways, real difficult in terms of getting out of that grass. We're going to look for long iron players this week. You're going to have a lot of shots that are going to be coming from the 175 yards and out range. You're really just trying to make pars. Even the par fives are a little more on the challenging side, but that's where you're going to have your birdie opportunities. So you want to get out to a fast start north course. And then if you can hold even or one under on the south course those first couple of days, although it has played a little bit easier. And I think with the winds down, not necessarily as much of an issue. So we could see a little bit more scoring than we're used to, but then the field is down a little bit this year too. So that's kind of what I would look at for the course this year.
I generally, not only just bombers, I usually target those guys who play well in majors, those guys who play well on tough courses. I put that in my article on our course comparison tool. You can search just by courses that play difficult.
Yes.
And I found that very valuable. And when you do that this week, a lot of the names pop up that you would expect, who play well in majors, who play well on tough courses. So for that reason, as far as lineup composition goes, unlike last week where I'm very prone to go more balanced to mix it up, this week I want top tier guys because most of the time, and we've seen some outliers win this tournament. We've seen Scott Stallings and we've seen Luke List and last year, Pavone.
Yeah.
For the most part, we've seen the John Rahm, the Jason Days, the Justin Rose, you know, the elite of players play well here. So for that reason, I'm going to go more stars and scrubs than
I'm really struggling with those. There's just not that many scrubs that are standing out for me. You know, like that's really the tricky part is as I look on this low end, like with all the guys that dropped this week, you know, there just aren't as many, like you kind of mentioned before, we'd love to see guys who play well in majors. We don't really have a lot of players in the field who play in majors this week.
Oh, no, I know. Not this week.
I mean, that's where I really had a tough time because, I mean, we have our normal sort of look at, okay, well, here's guys who play well at, you know, at this event, but it seems like we're really limited in that. I mean, you're really going to have to take some chances on some of these names. I think that, and that might even, maybe that is even the way to go, you know, where you just totally take a flyer on a guy in like the low 6K range, you know, just to have a shot at one or two extra guys at the top. Cause as I look through, you know, that 7K range where I've been able to find a ton of value in the first couple weeks of the season. This week for me, I just didn't find much that stood out up there.
Let's start at the top. Let's start with Ludvig Åberg at 10-8, Hideki 10-7, Finau 10-2, Sungjae 10,000. Which of those guys are you going to be targeting up top?
Yeah, this is a challenging one. I mean, at first look, I think probably Åberg and Hideki are probably my favorite two. I mean, this has been a good Tony course over the years too. Sungjae has been up and down here at this event. And then like last week, what a terrible miscut. I don't know what to think. I mean, he looked good at Kapalua a few weeks back. So that was fine. That was solid. But I mean, here he's had two great finishes, a few mediocre and a few poor. So I guess I don't really know where his game is going to be. This tends to be a Tony course. If I can fit the top three guys, Åberg, Matsuyama, and Finau in my core, which I think I will be able to.
Yep.
I don't think that's going to be a problem. It falls off so much in that 9K range compared to those guys that I don't. I guess I'd rather play those three guys that are kind of known studs that have the long iron play, that have the pedigree at this type of course. And, you know, although Tony didn't look very good last week, this has been a spot where he's been excellent throughout his career. So I don't have any real issue with starting with those three guys at the top. They all fit the course for me pretty well.
Yeah, it was pretty much just his third round last week, and I wasn't watching close enough to know what happened to Tony last week in the third round when he shot a 74, but the other rounds were fine. He's going to be fine on this course, I think, and I agree with you. That's what I was talking about, like targeting these three guys at the top, and then going down to the 7K range, because it does drop off significantly, and I would rather own those three guys than a Grazerman or a Bradley or someone in that range.
Has Jason Day done enough for you to be – I mean, this has been his spot over the years. He was third last week. He's been playing, you know, not horrible, I guess, but it's been a spot where he's either been very good or very bad at this course over the years. I know that Statboy will probably lock him down as his first pick.
Oh, people were playing him last week. I'm like,
dude. Well, he's only 7,900. I think I kind of liked him as like a secondary play at that price. I didn't mind taking a risk at that low of a price for his potential. It's a little tougher this week at 9,300 though.
Yeah, but here he has some good course history.
He does. That's what gets real tricky with this range, because you've got a couple guys like, you know, Will Zalatoris, if you're looking at a guy who fits really well on longer, tougher courses.
Yep.
You know, he's been that guy over the years, because you don't want to necessarily target Will on a course that's, you know, going to be like a birdie fest. You want him.
Although I heard that last week from some people, and he played pretty well.
Yeah. Which is good to see. Yeah. He had a 12th place finish, but typically he's not winning an event like that, as opposed to where he's usually in contention. Like if I look at my comp course model, he is second this week behind only Hideki, you know, which is no surprise at all. It's just, you wonder after the last season, is he okay now or not? He's been okay for the first couple of events so far. So I guess I would be cautiously optimistic. Are you feeling good about a guy like Max Grazerman at 9,700? He's been so good over the last 6 months, but this is going to be his first real test. Right. I think I'm probably okay passing on him at 9,700 at Torrey Pines. I don't think I need to roll with him quite yet. This is definitely a step up for him in terms of course. So I don't think I have to pay 9,700 for Grazerman this week.
I am a sucker for Sahith. He's at 9,100. You know, this is a course he's been good on. He ranks well on my course comp model. So I'll be owning some of him at 9,100. And then I'm going to pass on Shane Lowry. I'm going to pass on Maverick, although he intrigues me a little bit. I'm having a hard time fitting him in that range, because we are going with the top tier guys.
I think I'd rather play a guy like Taylor Pendrith at 8,800, just because his game off the tee and his iron play has been so superior. So far these last couple of seasons that I think you just get a lot. You really want to focus a lot more on tee to green type of play as well as that iron play, as opposed to the last couple of weeks. We've been looking at the short game and who can pitch and putt well and who's going to be able to get to minus 25 and whatnot as far as the winning score. You're not going to need that this week. And Penrith is actually a pretty good putter too, so I don't worry as much about him. But the tee to green game, he's so far out in front of a lot of these other guys that he's my favorite play there in that upper 8K range. What are you going to do? Here's another one that's challenging, kind of like Jason Day. We've got Max Homa at 8,600.
Yeah, yep.
He is somebody who's been fantastic at this course over the years. Obviously, former champion here, former champion at Riviera, had a really poor season in 2024. Do you think it's something he can just put behind him, or is it something we have to be kind of worried about for a while?
For that price on this course, I'm going to take a chance, because he's like competed to win only on like a handful of courses in his career.
That's true.
Silverado, which is a comp course, and Riviera, which is a comp course.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we know he has potential if he's on the right course.
Plays his best golf at home in California.
Yep. So I'm going to own him. He's one of the few guys that I actually own in the 8K range this week.
Think he's got any extra motivation with like the LA fires at all? Is that something that's going to drive him? Heard a little bit about that with the Rams as they crushed the Vikings a couple weeks ago. I don't know if that's something that any of these guys think much about, but
yeah, it turns out the Vikings just sucked ass, which is why the Rams won. It had nothing to do with motivation, but
yeah, that's very true. I think that's a good argument. I could see being in a hand for like 20% or so, especially this week when you get such a limited field. There's so few guys in the 7K range that I have a real strong conviction on that I think I can probably open it up there a little bit. Because for the rest of this range,
jumped out at me who I wouldn't necessarily think of off the top of my head as a guy who would compete in Torrey Pines is Aaron Rye.
Yes,
at 8,300. Yeah.
I like him. I love what we saw out of him last year. Just played real consistent golf throughout the year. He had kind of a breakout season. He's been okay here. I mean, he did have a sixth place finish here 3 years ago. He's made the cut in all three appearances. So 8,300. He's a guy with just a ton of top 25s throughout last season. So yeah, I don't mind that at all, because it gets tricky. Because yeah, when Akshay dropped out in this range, and he would have been another guy that I would have been kind of interested in, and now he's gone. And then you start to get to a guy like Ben Griffin, who we're going to play probably just about everywhere else as far as somebody with a cut maker with upside. But then you get to a course like this, and it gets
non-Bermuda greens.
Right. Yeah. All of a sudden his splits go from being, you know, he's gained nearly a half a stroke putting on on all other surfaces. He's lost almost a half a stroke putting on pull. I mean, the difference there, minus 0.909 is the difference between POA and other surfaces. And when you're as reliant on putting as he has been, although his rolling stats are really good over the last few rounds, but he doesn't tend to be nearly as good on some of these longer types of tracks. Yeah, his comp course numbers, he doesn't have a lot of comp course numbers. He's not horrible, but not amazing either. But I'll likely have to play at least a little bit of him, just because there isn't really not really a lot of names as we get down from 8K and below that I'm all that excited about. Like I may just end up playing Harry Hall again this week at 8K. Nothing good in terms of comp course numbers, but you look at like what he has been able to do with his consistency over the last really 4 or 5 months since he had his win last year. I think it's good enough to keep him around there for me.
This will be an interesting test for him, because I've been heavy on him thus far, but Missed the cut a few times here. I know he's a new golfer.
But you know what? Actually, I just had this news update handed to me as of 10:49 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is coming from Papa Turk out here. Harry Hall has withdrawn from the field at this week's Farmers Insurance Open. So, I guess we won't be playing Harry Hall there this week. He gets deleted here from. So that's as of just within the last couple hours or so that he dropped from the field. So hopefully that can stop at any point here.
Should I refresh my DraftKings app before we go any further in this podcast?
You might need to. It's getting sparse with all these names. Thomas Dietrich at 7,900. I think you probably just go with him for pure cut making ability. He's 2 for 2 here. He did finish 20th here a year ago. He had a 5th place finish at Kapalua to start the year. A little disappointing at Wailea, but somebody who's been pretty good making the cut. Do you like a guy like Mark Hubbard here? He was 20th here a year ago, although this is definitely not a course where you'd expect Mark Hubbard to shine by any means.
Outside of the fact that it's just West Coast, and I always, and early in the year, I usually target him for both. And he played well here last year. I'm okay with owning him just because his form has been so good. I'll own him. I also like Jaeger right there at 7,800 as well.
It's been a good cut maker for us over the last few years. He somehow finished 3rd here a year ago, which is crazy because this wouldn't necessarily be a spot where I would think he'd be.
He's pretty long off the tee.
An incredible fit. Yeah, his numbers. But yeah, like you look at his, and he's a different player. Like I looked at his comp course numbers. He's on the negative side over 21 starts, which is not great. But that includes a lot of starts prior to like 2023, where he had his huge career turnaround too. So that's one of those things you have to take into consideration with some of these guys, is that if they've had kind of a rebirth over the last year or two, then they still have a lot of bad numbers in the past that you're going to have to kind of wash out.
How do you feel about going to old man Justin Rose?
Oh boy. So yeah, I guess that would kind of fit within the realm of, you know, former guys who are, you know, great at former majors and somebody who's had some success here over the years. You know, I really haven't seen him play much in the last really few months. Where has he been? Has he done anything of late? Let me just pull up.
He played in Abu Dhabi. Nothing there. He played the DP World Tour.
So he was in Hong Kong. He was 18th, 34th in the DP World Championship, which is not amazing. Yes, 68 in Hong Kong. 13th at the French Open. 48th at the PGA Champ. I mean, he's played at least. Like, that's not horrible. He finished 22nd at the FedEx St. Jude. You could include him just because he was second. Somehow he was second at the Open last year. That was kind of crazy. That was really his only good finish in quite a stretch. So he had a 6th place finish at the PGA Championship and a 2nd at the Open Championship. And then for most of the rest of the year, he was kind of garbage. But this has been an area where he's been good over the years. I'm sure if I pop him up here on my comp course, 53 starts, he's gained over a stroke per round. So, I mean, yeah, I guess just based on familiarity, I wouldn't hate that. I think you could probably take a shot with a guy like Daniel Berger. This hasn't been an amazing course for him over the years, but we've started to see a little bit of form. He missed the cut at the Sony, but he was 21st, you know, last week down at the Amex. 7,600, not a terrible price for him there. Let's see who is kind of in this range.
This is where it gets really bleak for me. I like those guys in the upper 7K range, but this gets tough down here.
Yeah, there's not a lot that I love because down here you're kind of looking for who's familiar with the course, who's kind of long.
I like Sam Stevens. He had 73. He's popping for me a little bit.
Is it a Charlie Hoffman week for you?
Dude, is it ever a Charlie Hoffman week for me?
Yeah, 5th place finish last week. The guys were going bananas in the Slack chat. I think you could take some Johnny Vegas at 7,400. He's had some runs here in the past where he's been pretty good. He sparked a little bit towards the end of last season. He was fourth place just a couple of weeks ago at Kapalua, which is a spot where you can, when you get hot off the tee, you can perform well. So I think Johnny V might not be an awful option for some shares. The iron game's been really good. He ranks fourth for me in strokes gained approach over the last 16 rounds. So a little up and down here, but he's had a lot of decent finishes over the years. So I guess I don't mind that. Yeah, you mentioned Sam Stevens. Did you happen to read what I sent you on Gary Woodland there a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
I sent like the little interesting report, kind of talked about everything that he's gone through in recent years and dealing with the brain issues that he's had and everything that he's had. I guess I never realized just how much he had to go through. You know, I kind of thought, oh, he had like an operation or something, but you know, that's it. Now he's recovered. I didn't realize just how much that had affected him in recent years, but it was kind of interesting to note how he really is starting to feel like he is maybe back on his game a little bit this year. So I was encouraged by that. I'm going to at least give him some flyers here in the early season. This has been a spot where when he was at his best, it was a place that he played well. Pretty much every year he's not been, you know, nearly as good in recent years, but he did look pretty good at the Sony at a 16th place finish there. So I was quietly encouraged after kind of having read that column. You look at his rolling stats, they're pretty good. He ranks 13th among this field in strokes gained tee to green over the last 16 rounds there. The irons are looking pretty good. The short game, a little problematic, but maybe not as much of an issue there. So I am going to take some shares of Gary there just because there's not a lot else that I like there. And we have seen when he's at his best, and maybe that's a weak spot for me. I like to think that if guys are saying that they're recovered or that they're kind of on their way back, that, you know, maybe then you take a little more risk than normal. But I think I can include a little bit of Gary Woodland at 7,200.
He's a guy I'll be rooting for. He's become one of my daughter's favorite players because he is such a class act. We've ran into him a few times out at the 3M. He's been overly nice and engaging to the kids, signing autographs. We followed him a couple of times. He's thrown a golf ball to my daughter as we follow him, but just goes out of his way to be kind to the people who are watching him. So, and he's been going through a lot of crap through his career because, remember, he lost a child too, didn't he?
Oh, I don't remember.
Maybe it was a miscarriage or something, but I do remember he had like twins and he lost one of them or something like that. I don't know. It's been quite a few years ago, but I just remember reading that. So he's been dealing with a lot of stuff throughout his career, but you know, class act, good dude. And from everything I read, everyone likes him on tour too. So
yeah. Yes. It'd be good to see him if he's actually back. I hope he is. And yeah, I mean, he had a nice start there to the year, which is super encouraging. And yeah, we need to open it up a little down here in this range. What do you think about the defending champ at 7,200 this week? Is he? I mean, he's not somebody who really took off with that after that win last year. It's very hit and miss for the rest of the year, but
he played well for a couple events following.
Yes,
but then he dropped off dramatically.
Yeah, there's not anything that you'd be encouraged about. Like you pull up his recent rolling stats, and they're pretty awful. I mean, he did play. What events did he play? He played What has he played recently? He played in some DP World Tour events. Yeah, where did he play? Yeah, he did okay. No, he didn't really do okay. Hasn't really done much for a while.
Yeah, he hasn't.
I mean, he wasn't bad at where was his last decent outing. He was 15th at the Tour Championship. But, yes, since then it's been pretty quiet. His only noteworthy top 20 finish was at the Hero World Challenge, where I think there's only 19 players in the field. So I don't think we're going to count that top 20 as being a real feather in his cap. But, yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen much out of him since going back to, like, the Travelers, which would have been back in – he had a fifth place at the U.S. Open, 16th at the Travelers, and then, yeah, since then it's been pretty rough going for him. So there's not really a lot to be super encouraged about. Yeah, he had a couple great finishes. He finished first here, and then he was third at Pebble Beach. Maybe I just take a few shots on him because he's decent. Must be decent on POA, I guess, if he was able to do that on those two courses there. Yeah, what do you know? His POA splits are pretty good. He's had 11 rounds on POA courses, and he's been fantastic putting there. So maybe I'll just take a few. Maybe I'll take a few shares of him just because the rest of this range is a little bit lacking overall. Is there anybody else in the lower range that kind of stands out for you?
Besides Bramlett at 6,900, he stands out for me outside.
Yeah, he's from Cali, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. There's several things, and he's actually he's like ranked first, I believe, in strokes gained tee to green over his last like 12 rounds or something. So, been hitting the ball really well. It's just his putter, I believe, is really off. But I'll own some Bramlett.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, so looking at him over the last 16 rounds, he's actually ranks first among the field tee to green, but he ranks 150th in strokes gained putting. That's not very good.
Out of 156, that's not
one, very good. I think like 152.
Oh, not even that good. All right.
Yeah, let's see. He's bad on POA, but it turns out he's bad putting on every surface. Yeah, he is prolifically bad. Yeah, 253 rounds on other greens, and he's lost over a half a stroke per round. Yeah, he's beyond even like Lucas Glover level bad at putting on some of these. Yeah, he's even worse putting on POA, where he's averaged minus 0.7 strokes per round. But he has made the cut here in all five starts, and he has three top 25 finishes. And like I was saying at the top of the show, you're probably going to have to take some chances in the lower end. I'd rather dive down and take, you know, one or two guys in that 6K range than to load up on a 7K range that I'm not feeling super confident about at all to get those top names in. So, yeah, I don't mind some shares there. Adam Shank withdrew last week, but he's in the field this week. How do you feel about that? I don't know what to feel.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. I never know what to think about these. Oh. You know, like you get spoiled because in the NFL, they tell you down to like which ligament is hurt on a guy's elbow or knee when a guy goes down. Every other sport, a guy withdraws and you have no idea what's happening with the injury, what's happening with his health. Oh, he's back in the field a week later. So I guess it must not have been that. What did he have, like a cold or something? I mean, why would he be back so easily the following week, I guess? But yeah, so he's here. He's had two top 25 finishes in a row, and he had a sixth place finish at the Sony. But yeah, the withdrawal definitely definitely makes things a little more challenging for me to work with. Is there anybody else? Can you take a chance at a guy like Luke List at 6,800, or is he just too far gone?
Yeah, I own some shares of Luke List. Michael Kim at 7,200. I also own some shares. There's a few guys I can sprinkle in the 6K range, like Sam Ryder, Luke List. I'll own a couple shares of Jake Knapp just for the hell of it, but that's really about it.
Yeah, he's shown he can win, I guess. I mean, that's definitely something. He had a third place finish here a year ago. This was the part of the year where he started to get a little bit hot. Yeah. Sam Ryder's had a couple moments. I got Aaron here next to me. He had a very famously spotted Sam Ryder in the hotel 5 years ago and pointed out very loudly to everybody at our team, that's Sam Ryder over there. Oh, I don't know if I've ever seen somebody fanboy over Sam Ryder before. I don't think Sam Ryder's ever seen anybody fanboy over like that before. So
kind of
amusing there. But yeah, he has played. He has a two top 10 finishes here in his last four starts. And he's another one of those guys who's super streaky. You never really know when he's going to catch fire. But he has made the cut in both starts this year. So yeah, I don't hate that either. I think that's probably as much as I really like on this end. I don't know if I can trust anybody else on the lower range. Sneds, what about Sneds down here? This used to be a Sneds course years ago.
Oh yeah, for sure. He former winner. You remember that tournament that he ended up winning?
Yeah, it was crazy. The winds were knocking trees over. It was crazy. He posted a number.
Yeah, remember? He benefited from it. Yeah.
Yeah, he got done early, and then everybody else completely fell apart in finishing their rounds, and he didn't have to go back out. He ended up winning it. So, but that was back in the day when he was kind of relevant to the field. He's not sort of passed him by at this point too. But yeah, you get down here. Oh, here we go. I found one more for us. I can't believe that I overlooked him initially. I know this guy's going to be in my dad's lineup this week too. It's Ryan Palmer at 6,300. That's one of my dad's guys.
So. Dude, he started out pretty good last week. He was up there for a little bit.
This has been a course where he's been actually pretty good. He has a couple second place finishes, a handful of other top 25s. I mean, you're reaching there. You're not going to go off. You're definitely not going off of anything analytics wise. You know, like the Dan Campbells of the world certainly wouldn't approve of using Ryan Palmer in a situation like this. I'm sure if I pull him up on the rolling numbers, they're going to be, yeah, they're terrible. I mean, he's 130th in this field. He's losing a stroke per round over the last 16 rounds, tee to green, and losing over a stroke per round on strokes gained total there. So it's a wing and a prayer if you're all the way down on that end with Palmer, but he has certainly had some moments here over the years. So
I want to know, who does Papa Turcotte and Aaron, is Stat Boy there too?
He doesn't get here till tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Who do Aaron and Papa Turcotte have as their winners this week?
Who you got this week, Dad? He's working on his lineup right now. He had to reorganize because he had Harry Hall in his lineup earlier. Yeah, they had to pull that one out. He brought that over and showed it to me. Yeah. I'm not sure. Jason, I think Aaron was already teasing Stat Boy about Jason Day. Okay, so yeah, he's got the Gala in there. He's got Day in there. He had Hosler in there. He had you in there. So he's got some Homas in there. Yeah, so he's taking some chances, but he definitely likes the guys who have good records in terms of California ties with Tagala, Day, yep. Homo. So he's definitely got like a theme going on with some of the players that he's got.
Yeah, when you look at former like winners of the event, just about all of them have some sort of decent history here. Without Pavan last year is obviously an outlier, but yeah, like Homa and Luke List even had some history before he won. Right. So,
yeah, everybody does. Rose has been good here in other years. Yep. Yeah, Days have always been good over the years. You see guys who typically have very good histories who play well. Tony Finau plays well here just about every single year. So yeah, I would definitely look at that. I think you're onto something as far as looking at the handful of guys here who have been at major championships over the years who play well there, because this has been in the rotation for majors there too. So you want to look at just, and for the younger guys, it's going to be challenging to see which guys have a game that lines up, because we've seen them so rarely on majors courses. But look for guys who are strong off the tee and or guys who are really good with long iron play. I would say like plus 175. And beyond, if they don't have much for course history.
Do you think with the weaker field that they will make the course a little bit easier, the rough a little shorter?
I don't know how much they can change it this late, right? Like, are they really going to be out there? I mean, a lot of everything that's come down has happened within like the last couple days.
Yeah.
So you wonder, there was a little conversation about that, because it's, do they want it to play a lot tougher for Riviera when it's the Genesis in a couple weeks? Because I could see them doing that where they just say, all right, we're just going to play the South course and we're going to make it, we're going to make the rough longer for that one, and we'll take it down a little bit for this week. Because we've seen them do that in the past at Muirfield a few years back. Remember they played back-to-back weeks at Muirfield? That was in like 2020 when they were first coming back to it. I could see that being something to look at, but all of this has happened so late that you wonder just how much they can change this close to the tournament. So,
and it doesn't seem like they ever want to toughen it up a whole lot anymore these days.
No, yeah. It's certainly not going to play harder this week. If anything, I would guess it would play tougher when it comes here for the Genesis.
Yeah.
Next month. So that would be my guess.
All right. Anything else to add before we get out of here?
No, I think
you sound like hell. Would you catch the plague on the plane or something? Or
what? I started to get a cold on Saturday, so I've been fighting it off the last 3 days. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. But yeah, I think the worst of it is passed. Now it's, I mean, I'm not dripping anymore like I was on Saturday. So that at least that is good. That's the worst.
How did you possibly catch a cold in this weather?
No, it's you send the little ones off to school every week and they bring home. I mean, it's like every week one of them has something. So
it was minus 15 today. It was absolutely horrible this morning and it's supposed to be bad tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It looks like it's going to be 77 here on Wednesday afternoon out at the course. So we're much happier with that as opposed to being back there. Yeah, it looks like we're going to miss like the coldest of the days here. But it looks like you guys are going to warm up by Wednesday. It looks like it's going to be 26 there by Wednesday. So
who you got winning on Sunday real quick before we get out of here?
You know, it's I'm still waiting to see what the weather looks like. I kind of like Washington and the points. I think it opened at 5.5 for the Eagles as favorites. I think it's down to 5 right now. I kind of like Washington and the points as long as the weather doesn't go to hell like it was this last weekend. I just like what Washington's doing right now. Jaden Daniels just seems like the Iceman out there.
Yeah.
Doesn't the guy, I've never seen somebody look so calm and cool, especially as like a rookie. I've never seen anything like it. They show the guy on the sidelines. You don't even think he's got a pulse. He looks so relaxed. It's unbelievable. And I mean, just watching him make one pressure play after another in key situations. I mean, he just doesn't miss.
Same Lions defense that just stymied the Vikings offense.
It just makes those last two losses by the Vikings look so much worse.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're just talking up what a genius Aaron Glenn must be as a defensive coordinator as he's getting just absolutely torched by this rookie QB. And it's not like Washington has a ton of firepower. I mean, McLaurin is a very solid wide receiver, but I mean, beyond that, they don't have anybody else who you would consider to be like a star player that would be tough to shut down.
Absolutely.
As opposed to the Vikings where you got JJ Addison, TJ Hawkinson. I mean, Aaron Jones when he's at his best at running back. And somehow, what I noticed right away, the first four plays of the game for Washington, quick pass, quick pass, quick pass, quick pass. Like, I wonder if KOC is watching this game and taking any notes on what's going on. Because Washington really, they didn't throw the ball deep more than maybe they threw a deep ball in the first half to Deami Brown, which was, my God, that was a beautiful pass. His eyes were actually covered by the defender, but the ball was so perfectly
in his hands,
right into his hands, and he caught the ball. But I think that was really like the only deep ball that they threw the whole game. They just picked him apart with their game plan all the way through. So super impressive. I guess if the weather isn't hell, I kind of like the Redskins to cover over there. I think I'm done betting against the Chiefs at home in the playoffs. I learned that after the first two rounds last year and just said, no, I'm not doing this again. I'm just going to stick with the Chiefs. And so I think I'm going to do that again. I think I will stick with the Chiefs at home. I think they beat the Bills. I think the Bills played fine. I just think, I think the Ravens gave that game away more than the Bills really won it this last week. I mean, the Andrews drop in the end zone, I still can't believe that for the 2-point conversion. And then the fumble that he had prior to that. I mean, just, you know, two hideous turnovers from Lamar Jackson in the first half. So I wasn't so impressed with the Bills as much as I was just disappointed that the Ravens, I felt like, just let another playoff season slip away from them. It just happens every single year. I've never seen a team with that much talent. They legitimately could have been a Super Bowl team pretty much every year the last 5 years and have, for whatever reason, just not been able to close the deal. So I'm going with the Chiefs to cover there, and I'm going to go with Washington to cover so long as we don't have another snowstorm and whiteout conditions in Philly. Anything different from you on those?
Yeah, totally different. I'll go with Philly and Buffalo.
You think that Philly is going to cover against Washington?
I just don't think Daniel. Oh, cover. What's the spread?
It was 5 as of yesterday. It opened at 5.5. It was down to 5. I think it'll be a close game.
They'll cover. I wouldn't feel great about betting that. I just think they're going to do enough
It's up to 6.5 now for Philly. Wow. Okay.
I just don't think Daniels is going to look like that this week in Philly. Detroit defense was some of the worst defense that I've ever seen.
Zero pass rush,
zero nothing. They couldn't stop anything.
And then quarterback play. What happened to Goff?
Right.
He was so good, and he avoided mistakes. He had 2 games this year, though. He had the 1 game against the Texans, which they somehow won. And then yesterday, I mean, he was terrible. Those throws were awful.
All he needed to do was be just pretty good, because Gibbs is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, Gibbs is amazing. It was
absolutely phenomenal.
Good for them that Montgomery went down, because once they featured Gibbs as just as a 3-down back, which they should have been doing all along. I mean, he was taking over games. So yeah, we got Philly 6.5, and then KC -2. Yeah, I think the Chiefs they play ugly, but they find ways to win ugly too. I don't know. I don't think the Bills are going to get over the hump this week. You know, I think where the Bills are. I think where I still have reservations on the Bills are that they really don't have a way of threatening opponents with any kind of downfield passing game.
No, they don't.
It's non-existent at this
stage. And why is that? Because, I mean, you got Keon, who is a good downfield threat. And, well, I mean, Cooper has fallen off the face of the earth, and
Like one target on Saturday or Sunday? Like, I mean,
he just hit a wall in his career.
I mean, they traded for him, and he had 1 week where they had like 14 targets. And then since then, he's barely even on the field. Like, so I don't know what's happening there. So I feel like the Chiefs defense is pretty tough. Josh is going to be very tough to stop, but without like any real deep threat, I think the Chiefs have a good enough defense that they can crowd the line enough to force Josh into having to eventually start to throw the ball a little bit more than he's comfortable with. I don't know. If it was in Buffalo, I think maybe I'd be a little more favorable towards the Bills, but in Kansas City, the Chiefs over the years, they just don't lose these games. It's kind of like betting against the Patriots during their heyday when they were at home in these types of games. I mean, they just didn't lose all that often. So as just a 2-point favorite, I don't feel super strongly either way, but just seems like the kind of game where the Chiefs will find a way to make it ugly and win.
Yeah, it's not a game I will be putting any money on, but maybe it's just wishful thinking that the Chiefs fall this year, because I'd like to see Josh Allen and the Bills get there this year, but no, I won't be betting on it.
Wouldn't Abraham be disappointed though?
Oh yeah, huge. He's a big time Chiefs fan. He was going nuts this weekend.
Well, that's awesome. All right,
we'll get out of here. Best of luck, everybody, with the farmers this week, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.